All right, welcome back for another deep dive. Last time, remember, we were kind of getting into some of those fundamental concepts around how to, really cultivate talent within organizations.
Yeah, definitely a lot to unpack there.
Absolutely. And today we're going to kind of shift gears a little bit. We're going to be taking a closer look at chapter two of this handbook of talent development that we've been working our way through.
Okay, great.
So this chapter is titled Personal Development as Qualitative Personnel Change Management. So it sounds a little, maybe a little jargony, a little bit.
A little bit academic.
Yeah, exactly. But basically, it's looking at how focusing on individual growth can actually drive some pretty big positive changes across a whole company, the entire workforce. So we got a ton to dig into today.
Yeah.
Really want to kind of examine how nurturing that individual potential, it's not just like a feel good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's a core driver of real organizational progress.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's get into it. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds great. I think this chapter does a good job of setting the stage. It's really arguing that when you prioritize the development of each person, each employee, you're not just, improving their skills or giving them some new knowledge. You're actually having a direct impact on the overall quality and effectiveness of how you're managing people, your personnel management.
Oh, interesting.
It's about recognizing that when an individual grows, that can be a really powerful tool for the whole organization to evolve and change in positive ways.
Right, right. And I think one of the things that they kind of revisit in this chapter, and we touched on this a little bit last time, is this idea of competence models.
Yeah.
And they really emphasize that these models are such an important foundation for a whole bunch of different HR functions.
Mm-hmm.
Personal development, obviously, being one of them, but really all across the board.
Definitely. I mean, you could almost think of a competence model as being like a common language within a company. So everybody kind of has a shared understanding of, what skills are valued,
yeah.
What knowledge is important, what kinds of behaviors are we looking for in our employees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helpful, not just for personal development, but also for things like, hiring the right people, giving performance reviews that are meaningful, helping people understand what their career path might look like within the company.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it creates this kind of like alignment, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you're all on the same page.
Everyone's working from the same playbook, so to speak.
And one of the things that the chapter does a really good job of is connecting this idea of a competent model to the needs of adult learners. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, as adults, we learn differently than kids do. And one of the biggest factors in adult learning is motivation. So if you understand why you need to develop a particular skill, if you can see how it's going to benefit you and the company, you're way more likely to be motivated to actually put in the work and grow.
Makes sense. It's all about the why. Right?
Okay.
Like, why am I doing this?
Totally. And this is where I think the chapter gets really interesting, because they actually acknowledge that there's a pretty big debate going on around this whole concept of competence.
Yeah.
Like, is it even the right word to use?
Interesting.
They bring up some criticism from this guy, Manfred Becker, who argues that maybe the term competence is actually more problematic than helpful.
So what, like it's too narrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly what Becker's issue is without, reading his work in more detail.
Right.
But my guess is he's probably concerned that these competence models can become too rigid, right? They become these boxes that you have to tick instead of being these kind of dynamic frameworks for actual, meaningful growth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like you're just checking things off a list. You're not really developing as a person.
Exactly. So I think the key takeaway for anyone listening is to really think about how your own organization uses these competence models. Are they really fostering genuine development?
Mm.
Or are they just creating more bureaucracy and hurdles?
Yeah, that's a really good question to ask yourself.
Yeah.
And it's easy to see how it could go wrong.
Yeah.
Right. It could easily become just a checklist.
Yeah. Definitely. But on the other hand, the chapter also points to some research that shows that companies that are really dynamic, that are experiencing a lot of growth, they tend to invest heavily in developing their employees' competencies.
Interesting.
So it does seem like there's some real value there when it's done right.
Yeah. So it's not just about, throwing money at the problem. It's about being strategic and thoughtful about how you approach it.
Right. And while they acknowledge that it's really hard to measure exactly what the return on investment is, like in terms of dollars and cents,
right,
for competence development,
yeah,
they do say that the increase in a company's overall value is undeniable. So, even if you can't put an exact number on it, It's clear that developing your people makes your company stronger and more competitive.
It's like, yeah, the impact is there, even if it's hard to quantify.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder, what are some of the signs, you know, besides just financial performance, that your investment in competence development is actually paying off?
Right. Yeah. What are those qualitative indicators? So moving on from there, the chapter kind of connects personal development to the bigger picture of what a company is trying to achieve, like their overall strategic goals.
Yeah, exactly. They make the point that you can't just view personal development as something that happens in a vacuum, separate from what the business is trying to accomplish.
Right.
And they point out that the economic landscape, you know, all the markets that we operate in, they're constantly changing. They're incredibly complex.
Yeah.
So to really understand how to be strategic about your business, you have to be able to look at things from multiple different angles.
Uh-huh.
There's no single right answer. It's about being adaptable and open to different perspectives.
So it's like, yeah, the context really matters.
Totally. And it's interesting. They even bring up some research about how far ahead companies tend to plan, you know, what they call their planning horizon. And what's kind of surprising is that even if a company is really focused on the short term, like what's happening in the next quarter or the next year, they're saying that doesn't mean it's okay to ignore strategic thinking about developing your people.
Interesting. So it's almost like, you know, that long-term strategic thinking, maybe that's something that's become more common in recent years.
It could be, yeah. It's fascinating to think about how the whole concept of strategic planning has evolved over time. But the key takeaway here is that any efforts you make to develop your people, they should really be aligned with and support the overall direction that the company is trying to go in.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's got to be connected, right? It can't just be random training programs or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, how well do you see that connection being made in the organizations you're familiar with?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it varies a lot, honestly. You know, some companies are really good at linking personal development to their overall strategy, but others, it's kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, it's something to pay attention to for sure. Okay, so the next thing the chapter gets into is this massive force that's really shaping everything these days, digital transformation.
Oh, yeah.
And they specifically talk about what they call the digital agenda in human resources management.
Okay, so this is how digital is changing the way HR works, basically.
Exactly. And they give a really helpful overview of what this agenda looks like.
Awesome.
They have this diagram, figure 5 in the chapter, and it covers a ton of different themes that are all interconnected.
Cool.
So first of all, there's this idea of putting the employee experience at the center, almost like treating them as a customer. Then there's the whole use of data to understand the workforce through things like analytics and metrics. They talk about the need to rethink how work gets done, you know, maybe less focus on traditional office setups and more on remote and flexible work arrangements.
Right.
There's a big emphasis on making HR operations more efficient, using technology to automate things and free up HR professionals to focus on more strategic tasks. They also talk about giving employees better access to information so they can make more informed decisions about their own careers and development.
Yeah, I like that. More transparency.
Totally. And then there's this whole movement towards more agile organizational structures, being able to respond quickly to changes in the market.
Yeah, agility is huge these days.
It is. And then they talk about something they call applification, which is basically...
If it is applification, what is that?
Yeah, it's kind of a clunky term, but what they mean is using more app-like interfaces for HR processes.
Oh, I see. So making things more user-friendly, basically.
Right, exactly. And then there's the rise of digital learning platforms, you know, things like online courses and webinars.
Right, which we're all very familiar with by now.
Totally. And they also emphasize the importance of listening to employees, gathering feedback through digital channels, and using that feedback to make improvements.
Yeah, that's smart.
And then there's all this stuff about analytics, both descriptive and predictive. So using data to understand what's happening in the workforce right now, but also using it to try and predict what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, like what skills are we going to need a year from now, 5 years from now?
Exactly. And then they talk about the whole area of skills management, making sure that employees have the skills they need to be successful. And they talk about how leadership styles are having to adapt to this more networked digital world.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
It is. And then there's a lot of emphasis on collaboration, using digital tools to help people connect and work together more effectively. And finally, they talk about the need for more sophisticated personnel planning, using data to make better decisions about things like hiring and promotions.
Wow, that is a lot. It's almost like a whole new world for HR.
It really is. And the chapter makes a really strong point about the fact that HR professionals themselves need to develop new competencies to be successful in this digital environment.
Yeah, you can't be stuck in the old ways of doing things.
Exactly. So out of all of those themes, what jumps out at you as being particularly important for how organizations approach personal development?
I mean, they're all connected, right? But I think the focus on digital learning and the use of workforce analytics, those seemed especially critical to me.
Yeah, those are definitely big ones. The way people learn is changing so rapidly, and having good data to inform your development strategies is just so important.
Absolutely. So after that kind of whirlwind tour of the digital landscape, the chapter moves into talking about knowledge management.
Yeah, and they really highlight how essential knowledge management is for fostering learning and development.
Okay, so how do they frame that?
Well, they start by explaining that knowledge is really at the heart of both education and learning. And they even bring up this thing called North's knowledge ladder.
What's a knowledge ladder?
It's basically a way of visualizing how we go from raw data to information and then ultimately to valuable knowledge.
Oh, interesting. So it's like a process of refinement.
Exactly. And then that knowledge becomes the foundation for developing competence.
It's like the building blocks, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they point out that the way companies have approached knowledge management has evolved over time.
Okay, so how has it changed?
Well, in the early days, there was a really strong emphasis on technology.
Yeah, like just having the right systems in place.
Yeah, like building big databases and using things like wikis to share information. But over time, there was a growing realization that the people within an organization are the real holders of knowledge.
Oh, right, like their experience and their insights.
Exactly. Especially what they call implicit knowledge, the kind of stuff that you know how to do, but you can't necessarily write down in a manual.
Right. Like the stuff you just pick up by doing the work.
Exactly. And the shift towards recognizing the importance of people coincided with this broader trend of what we call the knowledge society.
So basically, knowledge is becoming more and more valuable as an asset.
Exactly. And this has been accelerated even further by the rise of social networking and all the digital tools that we have at our disposal.
Yeah, it's so much easier to share information and connect with people now.
It is. And the chapter emphasizes that in today's world, effective knowledge management is absolutely essential for any organization that wants to be successful.
So what's the ultimate goal of knowledge management, according to the chapter?
It's about making organizations more adaptable and more successful in a world that's constantly changing. And they argue that the best way to do that is through continuous learning, innovation, and reflection.
Oh, okay.
And all of those things are directly tied to developing the competence of your employees.
So it's like knowledge management provides the raw material, and then personal development helps people turn that raw material into actual skills and ability.
Exactly. It's a really powerful combination.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So then the chapter kind of shifts gears again and introduces this idea of talent management as another important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And they actually give a two-part definition of what they mean by talent.
Oh, interesting.
First, they say it's an inherent ability or a gift that allows someone to perform at a really high level.
Okay. So like a natural aptitude for something.
Exactly. But then they also say that talent refers to the individual who possesses that ability.
So it's both the ability and the person.
Right. And in the context of personal development, the focus is really on understanding the unique talents that each employee brings to the table and then figuring out how to nurture those talents and help them grow.
So it's really personalized then.
Very much so. And the chapter points out that talent management is becoming increasingly important for organizations these days.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
It's not just about attracting top talent from outside the company anymore. It's also about recognizing and developing the talent that you already have.
Right, because it's so expensive and time-consuming to constantly be hiring new people.
Totally. And the chapter emphasizes that talent management isn't just one thing. It's a whole set of strategies for identifying, attracting, developing, placing, and retaining talented individuals.
So it covers the entire employee life cycle, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's interesting because they actually suggest that the personnel development unit, the folks who are already focused on employee growth, might be the most logical place to house talent management within an organization.
Hmm. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, because it really emphasizes the importance of development as a core part of talent management.
It's not just about finding the right people. It's about helping them reach their full potential.
Exactly. But they also bring in a bit of a critical perspective by mentioning a study that was done in 2020 that raised some questions about how well HR is currently doing when it comes to talent management.
Oh, so there's still room for improvement.
Definitely. I think it's a good reminder that we need to constantly be evaluating and refining our approaches to talent management.
Okay, so shifting gears a little bit, the chapter also spends some time talking about the legal side of things.
Yeah, and this is where it gets a bit more specific to Germany, because they're really focused on the role of employee representatives in vocational training.
Okay, so this is about how training programs are regulated, basically.
Exactly. And the chapter highlights the fact that in Germany, the Works Council, which represents the employees, has quite a bit of power when it comes to training.
Interesting. So what kind of things do they have a say in?
Well, they can weigh in on what knowledge and skills are taught, how the training is delivered, where it takes place, how long it lasts, even who the trainers are and who gets to participate.
Wow, that's a lot of influence.
Yeah, it is. And they also mentioned that employers might be legally required to offer training if there are changes in the workplace that require employees to learn new skills.
You.
And in those cases, the Works Council can actually demand that the company provide specific training programs.
So it's not just a suggestion, it's an obligation.
In some cases, yeah. And it's important to remember that these are collective rights, meaning they apply to all employees, not just individuals.
Right, so it's not the same as just asking your boss for some training.
Exactly. And they also briefly mentioned that there are similar regulations in place for public sector employees. So the takeaway here is that if you're involved in designing or delivering training programs, you really need to be aware of these legal requirements and make sure you're involving employee representatives in the process.
Yeah, that sounds like a crucial step. So moving on, the chapter then kind of zooms out again and talks about all the different factors that are influencing the world of work, like in the broader market within companies, and how it's impacting employees themselves.
Right. They highlight a few key trends that are really shaping things right now. Digitalization, obviously, is a big one.
Yeah, we talked about that quite a bit already.
Yeah, it's everywhere. But they also talk about the shift towards a more sustainable, low-carbon economy. And then there are demographic changes, like the aging workforce and the increasing diversity of the labor pool.
Right, right. And it's interesting, they point out that demographics were already seen as a really important factor for workforce planning even before the pandemic hit.
Yeah, companies were already starting to grapple with the challenges and opportunities of an aging population.
And now, with the pandemic kind of receding into the background, it seems likely that demographics are going to become an even bigger focus in the years to come.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. And of course, the pandemic itself had a huge impact on the way we work.
Yeah, it forced everyone to adapt and learn new things very quickly.
Exactly. They talk about how companies had to figure out how to manage remote work, adopt new digital tools, and prioritize essential functions. And they also highlight the fact that the pandemic really accelerated this trend towards knowledge work, which is work that's based on information and ideas rather than physical labor.
Right, because so many people were suddenly working from home using their brains instead of their hands.
Exactly. And this shift towards knowledge work has big implications for the kinds of skills and development that people need to be successful in the future.
Yeah, it's like the pandemic kind of compressed years of change into a very short period of time.
It really did. And this naturally leads into a discussion about how the role of HR itself is evolving in response to all of these changes.
Right, because HR has to adapt too.
Exactly. And the chapter presents this as both a challenge and an opportunity for HR professionals.
Okay, so what's the challenge?
Well, it's about moving beyond the traditional administrative functions of HR, like payroll and benefits, and becoming more of a strategic partner to the business.
Oh, interesting. So it's about being more proactive and less reactive.
Exactly. And it's also about being a strong advocate for employees, making sure their needs are being met.
So it's like HR is becoming more of a bridge between the employees and the company's leadership.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And one of the key skills that they highlight for HR professionals in this evolving role is the ability to build and leverage networks.
Networks, like social networks.
Yeah, those are definitely part of it. But it's also about building strong relationships within the organization and with external partners.
So it's about being connected and knowing who to talk to.
Exactly. And they point out that this is essential for understanding the needs of employees, staying on top of trends in the labor market, and finding the best talent.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's all about information and relationships.
Exactly. And finally, the chapter dives into this really important but often complex area of personal development needs.
Okay, so this is about figuring out what kind of training and development each individual employee needs.
Yes, but it's also about understanding how those needs are perceived, both by the employee themselves and by others within the organization.
Oh, interesting. So there could be a disconnect there.
Yeah, absolutely. The chapter points out that these needs are inherently subjective.
Right, because everyone's different.
Exactly. And they raise this really important question about whether there's alignment between how an employee sees their own development needs and how those needs are perceived by their manager, their colleagues, or the organization as a whole.
So, like, maybe an employee thinks they need training in a particular area, but their manager doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, or maybe the company has identified a certain skill set as being critical for the future, but the employee doesn't see the value in developing those skills.
Right, so it's about getting everyone on the same page.
Exactly. And the chapter emphasizes that achieving that kind of shared understanding is a really important but often difficult process.
Yeah, I can imagine. It requires a lot of self-awareness from the employee and open, honest feedback from everyone else.
Absolutely. And they also point out that sometimes, even if an employee has a clear understanding of their development needs, those needs might not be something that the company can fulfill.
Oh, right.
So maybe the employee wants to move into a certain role or develop a particular skill set, but the company doesn't have any opportunities in that area.
And that could lead to the employee leaving, right?
Potentially, yeah, it's something that companies need to be aware of.
Yeah, for sure. So it's
Yeah.
like personal development needs to be a two-way street.
It does. And the chapter also makes an interesting connection to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is this psychological theory about human motivation.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
They argue that once people have their basic needs met, things like food, shelter, security, the desire for self-actualization, which includes things like personal growth and development, becomes a much stronger motivator.
So it's like once you're comfortable and secure, you
Ah.
start looking for ways to fulfill your potential.
Exactly. And this is why it's so important for organizations to provide opportunities for personal development.
Yeah, because if they don't, their employees might start looking for those opportunities elsewhere.
Exactly. So it's something that companies really need to pay attention to if they want to keep their best people engaged and motivated.
All right, so as we've kind of uncovered here, this chapter really lays out this crucial idea that personal development isn't just about individuals growing on their own. It's deeply intertwined with how an entire organization evolves and changes.
Definitely. It's about recognizing that when you invest in your people, you're investing in the future of your company.
Absolutely. And by focusing on those core competencies, the knowledge, the potential that each employee brings to the table, that's how companies can really navigate this crazy, complex world that we live in and shape their own future in a strategic way.
Yeah, it's not just about reacting to change, it's about being proactive and shaping the change that you want to see.
For sure. So, yeah, we've only kind of skimmed the surface here. There's so much rich detail in this chapter, but hopefully it's given you some food for thought, maybe spark some aha moments about how investing in people really does fuel progress for individuals and for organizations.
Definitely. It's a really insightful chapter.
So, next time we're going to dive into chapter three, which promises to get into some of the specific methods and tools that are used in talent development.
Okay.
Sounds good. So looking forward to unpacking that with you. See you next time.
See you then.